Billy Rose was a low rider. Billy Rose was a night fighter. Billy Rose knew trouble like the sound of his own name. Busted on a drunken charge, driving someone else's car. The local midnight sheriff's claim to fame. In an Arizona jail, there is some who tell the tale. I believe he fought the sergeant for some milk that he demanded. Knowing they'd remain the boss, knowing he would pay the cost, they saw he was severely reprimanded. Home, come and lay, help us lay young Billy down. Lulu was a Mexican, the law calls an alien for coming across the border with a baby and a wife. While the clothes upon his back were wet, still he thought that he could get some money and things to start a life. It hadn't been too very long when it seemed like everything went wrong. Didn't even have the time to find themselves a home. When this foreigner, a brown-skinned male, thrown inside a Texas jail, left the wife and baby quite alone. Kilowatt was an aging con of 65 who stood a chance to stay alive and leave the joint and walk the streets again. As the time he was to leave drew near, he suffered all the joy and fear of leaving 35 years in the pen. By the police who took him to the warden, walking slowly by his side. The warden said, "You won't remain here, but it seems a state retainer claims another 10 years of your life." He stepped out in Texas sunlight, and the cops all stood around. Threw himself down on the ground. They might as well just have laid that old man down. But we're gonna raise the prisons to the ground. Help us raise the prisons to the ground.
But as usual tonight, let's begin with some words from Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Steaming Mexico, other invasions. When Mexico is spoken of in the U.S., it is usually as the place from which tens of thousands of Mexicans immigrate annually. The view from the other side may be somewhat different, as U.S. businesses like the huge store chain Walmart insinuates itself into the nation's urban and suburban areas, growing like kudzu in the summer sun. In the ancient city of Teotihuacan, where some 2,200 years ago, a city of 500,000 people lived, the center of its spiritual and court life was the Pyramid of the Sun, where Aztec priests decided life or death. The ancient city covered an area larger than Rome, It was the seat of the rule of the god Quetzalcoatl, the plume serpent. Today, in the shadow of the pyramid, sits the latest Walmart, one of 687 superstores throughout Mexico. Among nationalistic Mexicans, the image of Walmart in the shadow of ancient Aztec ruins is deeply disconcerting. Rafael, a native of the Gulf region of Veracruz, said, "It is like an invasion, a new conquest." As Walmart and her corporate sisters have invaded Mexico for cheap labor, so too have the anti-labor and anti-indigenous attitudes from the U.S. In San Salvador Atenco recently, a cop riot attacked flower vendors in an attempt to drive out small businesses to open the way for bigger businesses. In their frenzy, the police killed a 14-year-old boy, Javier Cortez Santiago. Another boy, 16 years old, is reportedly in critical condition. In the press statement issued within minutes of the widely televised attack, an angry Zapatista subcomandante Marcos made the following statement. "Years ago here, in the Plaza of the Three Cultures, there was a massacre, and the government at the time said the army had been attacked. And a long time passed before someone asked what the army was doing at a student rally. And now it doesn't even occur to those communication media, including the radio, to ask what the armed forces, the police, were doing in San Salvador Atenco. And this alliance was happening between the PRD and PRI to get rid of some flower vendors because the mayor of Texcoco thinks they made the city ugly because he wants to put in a commercial center, a Walmart, there in Texcoco. And the small businessmen bother him. Now the PRD allied with the PRI at the state level, and now also allied with the PAN at the federal level, is going to have to notice all of this death." Subcomandante Marcos announced that the Zapatista Army of National Liberation was put on red alert. His reference to the earlier army attack was to the events of 1968, when Mexican students were massacred by the government. Several weeks ago, 800 army troops attacked Sicarza Steel Mill in Michoacán, Mexico, before being repelled by some 500 workers. Steelworkers seized the plant after the government announced plans to remove their elected president. Also, workers are protesting the police killing of two steelworkers, José Luis Castillo Zuniega and Héctor Álvarez Gómez, who were among the 70 other workers hurt when cops used tear gas and live fire to try to retake the plant. The struggles in Mexico have long and complex histories, but almost all of the present unrest can be traced to NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. Although promised to Americans as a boon to the economy, it has wreaked havoc on both sides of the border. If it has been a boon, it was to big business, which is getting products made at cheaper costs and therefore making bigger profits. The war against labor cannot be and has never been just a national one. While the NAFTA pact was sold as free trade, in reality, it meant freedom for businesses, yet difficulties for labor. In Mexico, Walmart pays its non-union workers 13 pesos an hour, or about $1.20. Sounds almost free, all right. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are produced by Noel Hanrahan.
Thank you, Maria. You always have comments that are certainly from the voice of the voiceless. Today I have a guest. Before I introduce her, I want to remind everyone that the Girl Scouts Beyond Bars is presenting a movie premiere, The Circle is Round. This documentary was created by a team of girls age 8 to 15, and it's going to be at the Northwest Natural Gas Building, 220 Northwest 2nd Avenue. For some information, you can contact Evelyn Wohler, 503-598-6506. I'll leave that information at the KBOO desk if you want to call in to get more information. Now tonight, I want to introduce my guest, Teresa Huggins. I met her at a Western Prison Project. It's one of many good things that the Western Prison Project presents, and we went around the circle introducing ourselves. And Teresa made comments that told me that she was indeed an advocate of prison reform. And so I connected with her and invited her to be here tonight. So, Teresa, won't you say hello to the folks?
Hello, everyone.
I'm so glad you're here. Will you tell me, what is your life experience and connection to our movement and prison reform? Can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, Ruth, let me tell you, I was married to a man who, I'm married to a man who went to prison and went to prison again and again, and he went back and back again. And I'll tell you, it was pretty frustrating what I had to go through. And it was probably the most difficult thing that I've ever done in my life for two reasons. One was that out there during the time, this was about 15, 20 years ago, there was no one, I didn't find anyone that really thought I should try to wait for someone in prison. Most people's comment was, I wouldn't wait for someone. So I felt really isolated at times and frustrated. But the second reason that made it really hard was while my husband was in prison, I would always try to keep my life together and do things so I could visit him every day.
Well, that's not easy.
Yeah, no, that wasn't easy at all. But I realized something as I quit doing my illegal activities and getting involved in the things that I did, that people, most people believed that when they sent someone to prison, and I bet you everybody listening knows this. There's no one I haven't spoke to that realizes this, that when you send someone to prison, that you've increased their chances of being raped, abused, molested, or killed. And during that time, while my husband was in prison, I used to wonder when I listened to people casually walking down the street saying, oh, well, he'll get his, I would think, how many stereos would a person have to steal for that to be okay? How much drugs do they have to do for you, for anybody to think that that was okay, that you could send him to prison and they might be killed or raped? And I'll tell you, as you can see, it was hard to deal with my anger.
Well, you have some life experience there that's telling me you have some real insight into this, and I really appreciate you sharing some of that story with us. Tell me, Teresa, before we went on the show, you told me that you had a book you wanted to talk about. So before I let you introduce that, let's hear just a little music. Well, that was Irma Thomas singing, I Wish I Knew How It Feels to Be Free. How does that grab you, Teresa?
Grabs me pretty good.
You want to tell us about the book now?
Yeah, I'd love to. It was a good idea that you played that song, because the main author of the book is a friend of mine who has been in the California Department of Corrections for 40 years. And let me tell you a little bit about the history of the book and how it came about before I tell you any about the title or anything else. As I said, it's a friend of mine that is in the California Department of Corrections, been in there for over 40 years. I met him during one of my husband's times of being incarcerated. They were in the same prison, Vacaville. And we met in the visiting room. Him and his wife would visit as I visited my husband. And we were some of the regulars. We'd be there 4 days, 5 days a week, spending as much time as we could together, and we got to know each other. We all four became really good friends, and we kept in touch over the years. And one day about 2 years ago, Terry, one of his letters or one of his calls, decided he wanted to make a publish a cookbook. He said, let's publish a cookbook. So I told him, wow, really great idea, but if we publish a cookbook, a prison cookbook, we've got to publish, put in prison art. So what Terry did was he went around the yard and he got recipes from all the different clubs and organizations. We've got recipes from Rattlesnake Stew to Mary Jane's Sweets. We also have like fried chicken and hot pockets, and they're recipes from the California Department of Corrections. So there's a lot of hot pot recipes.
Well, I wanted to play "Hey, Good Looking, What You Got Cooking" by Hank Williams before we introduce that, but I wasn't able to get my hands on it. But go on about the book.
Okay. Well, the cookbook then just grew because after he collected recipes from all the different clubs and organizations on the yard, we have like five finger ham, grilled cheese sandwiches. We also tell you how to grill your sandwiches, how to adjust your hot pots to use it oil in it, and to make what they call a bomb.
Do they do this right in their cell?
Oh, yeah. The bomb is used to heat metal trays. They take the bed frames and desks so the metal surface can be cooked for hot food. And what you do is you roll up toilet paper into a circle around your hand, tucking the ends to create a toilet paper bomb, and then you light it on fire. And in the book, there's also a cute story about a friend of Terry's that made a bomb and started his cell on fire. And that's another thing. Terry added some of his own stories.
So it's not just recipes.
No.
Do you think the readers get a real insight into living in a cell from reading this and sharing these recipes?
Definitely. Terry took stories from simple ones about being in the visiting room and getting a hard time about having one of his visitors brought in money and got in trouble, to stories about, like I said, cooking in a cell and what happened. He talks about other prisoners he knows that are lifers and some of their idiosyncrasies. And
now, is Terry a lifer?
Terry's a lifer. He's a lifer. We've been hoping that he will get out. He's right now got his case in court and is coming up this June for another parole hearing. And we're really hoping that he gets out because he is beyond his the matrix or the parole date. The California Department of Corrections, according to their own guidelines, should have left him out at least 15 years ago. Hmm. So, and we were hoping some of the sales of the book and stuff would help towards his attorney fees and such. But like I was saying, as we went along and put this book together, Terry also went around the yard and got, I told him, you can't have prison art unless you have prison tattoo art. So he went around to all the best tattoo artists and said, give me a sample of what you got. And every one of them from all the different clubs, again, and organizations on the yard, they donated a sample and all the different tattoo artists. And then he had a friend of his, David Rickliff, illustrate all of them. So they're actually drawn by the same man, but they're showing different different artists.
What about Terry? Is he covered with tattoos?
Actually, you know, he doesn't have as many as you'd think. My husband is, but he's got a few. He says he's never found many that he really wanted. So.
Well, I haven't found any that I wanted, but go on.
Yeah,
tell
he's got a few of the main ones. So, but yeah, after we've got all that together, we tell a little bit how to, you know, we don't tell you how to smuggle the food in and out of prison because for decency, we, as you know, there's probably some ways some people really wouldn't want to hear. So,
but I don't think I want to hear it either.
And we give you a little bit of information on how much it costs to buy food and what you could sell food on
but
the
yard.
But
does the food have to be smuggled in? Can't their guests just bring them certain things?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, oh. You can. If you have someone out on the streets, they'll send you a package. And all these recipes are based on packaged food and stuff you can probably get on the yard. But but as you know, prisoners are quite resourceful. They come up with all sorts of ways. Like I said, one of the recipes being in California is rattlesnake stew. Mm. And it came from one of the organizations that were from, they were from Mexico. So they caught the rattlesnakes on the yard, and they tell you how to catch it without getting bit and how to take the poison out and defang it.
Well, so I would recommend anyone who wants to send a rattlesnake to a prisoner for some rattlesnake stew should send a dead one. But okay,
yeah,
go on.
Yeah. I don't think they let that in.
I see.
You know, I don't. It's something you got. Well, in the story, in the book, we tell you that you've got to try to catch the rattlesnake without being bit or shot, because if you're moving that fast on the yard, you're in potential danger right there. Mm. So.
What prison was this written in?
He's down in Southern California.
In Southern California.
Yeah, in San Diego at the prison down
well,
there.
Well, you're sharing so much about the book. Tell me, how could they get the book, and how can other people get things published if they had a book to write?
Okay. Well, the book, you can get simply...
The name of it is what?
Well, I was going to, okay, that came as another part of the story. After we got everything together, we wrote down a bunch of names, and we thought this one was funny. Criminals, Let Them Fry, Boil, and Sauté. It's a guide to prison cell cooking.
That is good.
Yeah, we wrote down a list, and we laughed at that. Mm-hmm. But before we actually published it, before we got it all the way done, I said you can't have a prison cookbook without Pruno, without the home brew. So there's a couple of recipes in there that make it illegal to send into the prisons. So if there's some listeners out there going, wow, I'd really want to order this cookbook, it's more of a fun cookbook, and it's for a general population. We have to remove the alcohol recipes in order to get it into the prison.
Well, they could get a copy and make copies of ones that can be sent to the prison and send copies to their friends and relatives who are incarcerated.
Yeah, I've sent some books into the prisons, and some prisons have sent it back because it tells you how to make some illegal things. And
is
you
this
know,
a hardback or soft cover?
We've got both hardback
so
and soft.
So if they got the soft cover, it wouldn't be so bad to just... make copies of the ones that they could send.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And and in it, the prison, the tattoo illustrations are wonderful. I mean, they're some of the best ones I've ever seen. They're really beautiful. For those themselves, the book is really cheap. It's $18.95 for a hardback and $14.95 for a softback. But one of those drawings in itself costs $200. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds like a good deal to me.
Right.
So tell me about the getting it published a little bit.
Well, that part, we set out and we set up, Terry and I set up a publishing company. And I have to say, I learned more about publishing this book, and made several mistakes, but we got it published, and we have it published under our publishing name.
And how did you publish it? The name of the book when you published it was?
Criminals, Let Them Fry, Sauté and Boil. And we were... Our publishing company is started out as Square One Publishing, but then we got into apparently there's another Square One Publishing out there, and they said you've got to stop using that name, and so we had some legal issues, and we came up with a better name anyway. So now we're reopened as Shock Collar Press. After a while of doing some legal issues, we've just come back, and we're now called Shock Collar Press. And what the idea of the publishing company we have is we want to publish prison art and literature. We're looking for other prisoners that want to be published to publish a book. What we found out in the course of publishing a book is it's awfully difficult to sell in bulk to the major distributors as a publishing company unless you have 8 to 10 books. Well, Terry and I are in the process of finishing up a couple more books of our own, and we've got some other books on the way. But once we get in some other people that want to publish a book and we publish it for them, then we're able to, as a publisher, send out our catalog to these major distributors, and then they pick through, they pick and choose what they want, and they'll order.
Well, I've placed most of the ones that I had printed in my Help Wanted book, which was a collection of illustrated poems that are all activism. What would I do if I wanted to have your publishing company publish the next printing, because I need to do a next printing soon?
Did you get an ISB number?
No.
Do you have? Okay. I have, what I do as a publisher is I get you the ISB number.
Good.
And I have that. I can issue that once I decide to put
That's
it under.
That's great.
And that helps when you're dealing with any bookstore. They all want ISB numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And once you're issued an ISB number, then you go to get the copyright. And so as a publisher, I would issue you the ISB number, send you in, get you copyrighted. I also have some people that will review the book. So you can have reviews if you want to on it, and some different people comments that you have.
Now, and to publish it, you would want it manuscript ready, that all you'd have to do is photo process of printing it? Or
what I would like, if somebody's interested, is to have the book already on a CD disc for the computer,
uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
In a Word document or a similar type document.
Well, I qualify for that.
Okay. But I understand that there's probably people in prison sitting there going, damn,
that would be very difficult.
Okay, and they're going, I don't have anybody out on the streets and wish, all my people are messing up and stuff. Well, depending on the person, I would like to see the paper manuscript.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody wants to send it to me, I can read it over, and I know how to type. I know how to do those things.
Right.
But if I'm interested, I'd be willing to work with them.
Mm-hmm.
One-on-one, getting them published under the shot caller name.
To produce the appropriate format.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, I learned from my first book all the mistakes and the things that I did with it. And our goal, our dream, is to have a publishing company dedicated to prison art and literature for those people sitting in prison that want to be published. Because I believe, and we believe, that if we get our stories out there, if we start telling our stories and showing our art, maybe we won't be the degenerates amongst man, or, I don't know. Maybe people will start realizing that these are human beings, and maybe they don't belong in prison where they might get raped, abused.
Well, we only have a couple minutes left.
Okay.
I know you have a lot more you could say on this, and I know there's a lot more I'm interested in. Is there a website or a way to connect you that you would want to give over the air?
Yes. Right now it's not up and running, but it'll be up in a couple of days, and it's www.shotcallerpress.com.
Would you say that once more and spell out every letter of the website number?
Okay, it's www.shotcallerpress.com, and that's shotcallerpress.com.
That's good. Okay, I'm just going to say one more sentence if you want to sum up what you've thought about your visit with us today, about your life as a person who's married someone that was incarcerated and worked your way through the system of visiting and courting in spite of the obstacles that they put up, and worked your way through the system of producing something in print that we have trouble getting printed. And I'm going to thank you. Thank you so much for coming with us. I'd like to have you back sometime. And we're going to close our show with some music by Ray Charles, Who Cares? And I welcome everyone to call us if you have comments about the program. We'll be back in a couple weeks. And keep in touch. Reggie, Bob, and I welcome you and thank you for your attention to Prison Pipeline, and thank you, Teresa Huggins, today.
Okay. Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Yeah.
Well, your old girlfriend told me your new lover left you, but you're too proud to tell old you-know-who. Say you don't have time to work me in your busy schedule, but I know you're only busy being sad and blue. So who cares?
Who cares
if you're feeling lonely? Who cares?
Who cares
if you're sad and blue? Who cares?
Who cares
if you've got no one to love you?
Well, who cares?
I do.
That's who.
Well, I heard you were lonely, so I wanted to call you. I thought you'd say that I'm the one you missed. But when you picked up the phone, you pretended not to know me. When I told you I still loved you, you replied, "Who's this?"
That's right.
Well, who cares?
Who cares
if you're feeling lonely? Who cares?
Who cares
if you're sad and